This is Divorce Happy Hour, a show about divorce and issues people face going through divorce. Your co-hosts are Christina Previtt and John Knocklinger. For more information about the show and to connect with us, head over to divorcehappyhour.com. And now, on to today's show.
All right, everybody, we are back. If you just saw us try to go live a few minutes ago, you probably got a good laugh. We had some technical difficulties, but I'm actually going to leave that up on if it's okay with you, because, you know, it's just funny. We're all doing our best here. But anyway, I'm Christina Previtt. I'm here with another episode of Divorce Happy Hour Live and special guest today. You know, I'm having my own problems today because I just lost my notes. Joining us is Eileen Costa-Mint. She is a licensed clinical social worker and a family therapist for children, couples, and adults in New York and New Jersey. And today we are going to talk about what happens on a child study team. Because Eileen serves on a child study team. So I'm actually interested in hearing about this because I really don't know much about this. And, you know, I'm guessing a lot of other people don't either. So thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Christine, and thank you so much for having me in your show. So yes, I'm a child study team member and I am the school social worker. So the child study team consists of the school social worker myself. I'm looking at social emotional. When I'm looking at a child, I look at the whole child. There's also the school psychologist that looks at the child's intellectual cognitive abilities or potential. And there's also the learning disabilities teacher consultant. And this individual looks at the student's academic functioning. We are the child study team in a school.
Okay, so a child study team, is this specifically to evaluate kids that need an IEP or, you know, some kind of learning plan, or is it beyond that?
So the child study team is in a school in order to support the principals, the teachers, and all the staff members. And I know it might sound confusing. What are these adults doing in the school? They don't have a classroom, right? But what we do is that we get referrals, right? So we get referrals from parents, from doctors, from teachers, from agencies, indicating, for example, that there's a student that has an academic issue or maybe a behavioral issue, right? So if you'd like me to give you an example, I can.
Let's take all the mystery out of this. And I'm getting an education because I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so let me just give you an example, okay? So you can better understand exactly what happened. So the name that I'm going to be using right now is totally fictional, Christina, okay? So let's call this child Jolly Doe. Instead of Jane Doe, Jolly Doe, okay? Because she's 6 years old, right? So this child is 6 years old and the parents are having issues at home, right? I mean, you're a divorce attorney, you know, right? So sometimes parents are having issues at home. Things are not going well. Dad and mom are arguing. There's a lot of things going on in the home and the parents are focused on each other. And when they look at the child, they immediately think, well, the reason why Jolly's behaving that way is because we're arguing too much. Things are not going well at home, right? That's the first thing parents would tell the teacher, right? So the teacher usually, you know, has all these concerns. You know, Jolly wants to, and part of this is actually true. This actually happened where Jolly actually wanted to be a dog. That's an example, right? So Jolly was barking at her mom, barking at the dad, and Jolly was all over the place, right? In terms of being very hyperactive, jumping from furniture to furniture. But Jolly has friends. She's socially appropriate, but not really. Disruptive in the classroom. Not completing assignments, right?
So I'm is giving you not normal. I mean, don't you
picture of a child, of a regular child in a public school, and the presentation and what teachers are going through. This child is all over the place in terms of she's disorganized, she's 6 years old, academically she's not doing well. So what does the mother do? The mother writes a letter to the child study team. She's referring her daughter to the child study team because the parents are concerned there's something going on. But then again, they're also in denial about what exactly is happening, because mom is saying it's because we're not doing well as a couple. Because we're not doing well, our daughter's not doing well, but we want the child study team to evaluate our daughter. So what we do is we immediately assign a case manager, right? So it might be me, I'm the social worker. And what I do is within 20 days, I immediately pick up the phone and I contact the parents, right? We're going to have him way before 20 days. I want a date and a time that's convenient for you so you guys can come in and we can have something called an identification meeting, right? So that's the first step. During the identification meeting, the parents come in. I have the letter. The parents are concerned. The parents are there. The teacher is there. I also invite a special education teacher to come to be with me. I also invite the speech and language therapist because I want to make sure that everything is okay with this student by the name of Jolly, right? I let the principal know. I let the vice principal know. The whole team is there. The learning consultant, the school psychologist, the parents, the principal might be there. I told you about the general teacher, the special ed teacher. We also need the special education teacher there. So we have this identification meeting. I don't know the student. I know nothing about the student. So when we open up the meeting, the mom talks a little bit about her daughter, right? So the daughter's very hyperactive. The daughter is not paying attention. The daughter is not picking up on sight words. She's lacking phonemic awareness. The child is not doing her homework. The parents are a little concerned, but they're all blaming it on each other, right? Because they're having issues. The teacher is highly, highly concerned because the child is disruptive in class and she talks and she doesn't raise her hand, right? The teacher is worried to the extreme because this child thinks she's a dog. Because some kids are very imaginative, right? At that age, right? Some kids think that they're superheroes, right? So the mom says to me, you know, I don't know what to do because my daughter, you know, is concerning me. So what is the first thing that we do? The first thing that we do is we make sure we look at the district assessments, what assessments were done. How is this child doing academically? How is she doing socially? How is she doing emotionally? And what is actually happening with this child? I'm wondering. Was there INRS? Was INRS involved, right? That's the INRS. Excuse me?
What is INRS?
That's the Intervention and Referral Services Committee. Were they involved? That's what I want to know during the meeting.
Now, are we talking about New Jersey or New York?
We're talking about New Jersey.
Okay.
So in New Jersey, we're looking at INRS and we're saying to ourselves, okay, did this child receive any strategies or any interventions, right? What strategies and interventions worked and what did not work for this child? Because
let me back up a little bit. So you said in this hypothetical, you said that the parent initiated it because, mm-hmm. you know, they're having some, the parent recognized some problems. So what is that typically how it happens? Or is it often initiated by the teacher? Like, I think sometimes teachers recognize things before the parent does.
To be honest with you, more often than not, I'm seeing more and more, it is the parent that comes to us. But remember, we're looking for suspected disability. So
okay.
When we look at the child, so the parent is concerned and sometimes the parent wants a quick fix, you know, let the child study team evaluate. We make the determination. The child study team determines, are we going to take this case? Are we going to evaluate this child? because we have all these concerns, right? So in this case, right, just to give you a better understanding, say that we did take the case, right? So we took the case and we're going to do something called the social assessment. I want to know everything about this child. I want to know everything in terms of developmental, mom's information, medical, adaptive behavior. Can she put on her shoes? Can she tie her, you know, her jacket? Can she put on her hat? I want to know everything in terms of social emotional. The school psychologist is going to also want to evaluate the child, and she's going to do a psychological evaluation. Then you have the learning consultant. The learning consultant is going to do an educational evaluation to see what is happening. Why is the child not learning? Why is it that academically her grades are so inconsistent? So we're curious, right?
So what, but you said the purpose is to determine if there's a disability. Is that the limited purpose of the child study team?
It's not the limited purpose. What we want to know is what is impeding this child from learning? What's getting in the way? What is that? Does she have a disability or doesn't she? Right?
So what if it's just that the kid is having problems at home? Like, what if parents are getting divorced, or, you know, there's some kind of abuse or neglect happening at home? You know, at what point is it the child study team's role to intervene or not? You know, when is it not a case for a child study team?
Excellent question. So right now, when it comes to the student, right, Jolly, for example, we hear from the teacher, we have documented the fact that her grades are so inconsistent. We have the fact that she's a behavioral problem, right? So she's actually disrupting the class. Yes, there are problems at home. Maybe mom and dad are getting a divorce and thinking about divorcing. Maybe they already separated, right? And yes, there are those issues, but we can't ignore the fact that we have a child who is not able to consistently learn the way she deserves to learn, right? So we, the school district, we are responsible to make sure that this child is educated, right? So in this case, we take the case, the child study team is going to do observations. I'm going to go inside the classroom and I'm going to observe this child. I'm going to observe her talking to her peers. I'm going to see where she's sitting. Is she sitting in the back of the room, in the front of the room, in the corner of the room? I want to see her walking up and down the stairs. I want to see her gait. I want to see how she picks up a pencil. I want to make sure that she can write properly, walk properly, speak properly, that she has no difficulty with her expressive language, with her, you know, the way that she, you know, takes in information. I'm looking at the whole child, right? We all are. Speech language therapist is looking at the whole child. Everybody's seeing what is it that this child needs, because there's something going on where she's not learning consistently in her behavior. Is her behavior because of what's happening at home? Or is her behavior because there's something else going on? So the child study team, we're like detectives, right, Christina? We need to find out what is wrong with this little girl. Why is she barking? Why is she pretending she's a dog? Why is she running outside the classroom? Why is she not raising her hand? Why is Jolly calling out in class, right? We want to know.
So what if you can't reach a conclusion? Do you refer the matter out? Does that ever happen?
No, it never happens. We always reach a conclusion. We always, because this is what we do. We're child specialists. So we notice, you know, we call in a behaviorist if we have to, right? The district calls in a behaviorist and we find out what's the targeted behavior? What is happening? Why is she behaving this way? Why is she so disruptive? And then we notice that Jolly's not paying attention. Jolly's impulsive. That's why she talks out of line. That's why she can't get organized. She's experiencing difficulty. Jolly is experiencing an attention deficit issue, right? That's causing her to behave in such a manner where she's actually avoiding, right? Avoiding classwork. She doesn't want to do the homework. She'd rather bark. She'd rather act like the dog. She'd rather jump around from couch to couch at home, right? And bark at her parents and be this behavioral issue because maybe she's covering up the fact that she has such difficulty paying attention. So that's an example of a child with ADHD that I just gave you, right? But you might think it's because of what's happening at home. But as the specialist that we are, we pick up on the fact that she's not focused, she's not attending. And once, so let me back up a little. I always ask my parents, when was the last time your child had a well checkup visit? Because that's important, Christina. Making sure that your child goes to the doctor, making sure that the parent discusses with the doctor what their concerns are, right?
Well, what if you don't even have concerns? I mean, you should still be going to the doctor at least once a year, right?
Yeah, you should always be going to the doctor, but the parents should say, you know, I'm worried. My child is lethargic. My child is not attending. My child thinks she's a dog and she's barking. Kids are unable to express themselves. And sometimes adults don't really understand what is happening behind the child. Yeah. So, you know, the teacher saw this student as a behavioral problem, but we, the child study team, saw the student as a child who's exhibiting difficulty with focus and attention, and she's task avoidant.
So what's the outcome then that you do your whole evaluation, all the team members, you know, come together? Do you make a recommendation? What, you know, how, like, do you express your conclusions in a written report? What happens at the end?
So for this case, for example, so you could just follow me along. We do our evaluations. The parent is talking to the pediatrician. Maybe the pediatrician actually referred the parent to see a neurodevelopmental specialist, a neurologist, right? So that maybe that neurologist is going to do a neurodevelopmental evaluation to try and figure out exactly, does this child have attention deficit disorder, right? With hyperactivity, right? So the parent is busy doing that while we're busy observing, while we're busy evaluating, while we are gathering information from the teachers. And 90 days later, right? But before the 90 days, of course, we, you know, give parents all of our reports so that the parents can review the reports. Within 90 days, we have a meeting, and it's called the eligibility meeting, because we want to find out, is Jolly eligible for special education services? That's the meeting that we're having. During this meeting, the parent is part of the child study team. The parent is very, very important because we're getting a lot of input from the parent, right? In terms of what is going on with this child. During this time, we all go over our reports. I go over my social assessment, for example, and I say, you know what? This child is age appropriate. She has a wonderful imagination, right? Maybe you should get her the puppy that she wants because, right? But this child is experiencing these kinds of difficulties in the classroom. She's not paying attention. She's not focusing. And she's task avoidant. What can we do, right? So I give the parents some strategies in terms of what they can do. The learning consultant is going to say, you know what? She maybe noticed the same thing. Jolly's not paying attention, but she is capable. She is able. And then the psychologist might come in and read her report and say, you know what? This child has an average IQ. This child is average. She has the potential to learn. This child is not eligible for special, excuse me. Then the speech and language therapist comes in. And the speech and language therapist says, you know what, this child has exceptional, expressive, receptive language. There's no issues with the articulation. This child is able to process information.
Okay, so everything's normal. Then what? What do we do if everything's normal? I mean, it sounds like if there's, I mean, in most cases.
But is everything normal though, Christina? Is everything actually normal?
Well, that's what I'm saying is I would guess that in most cases, if there's been some indication of a problem, you know, you find the cause for it. Right.
So the neurological report comes back. The child has ADHD, correct? So she is not eligible for special education services with our department, with the child study team department, but the child will benefit from something called the 504 plan. She does have a medical diagnosis.
So is that basically an IEP or is that, are they two different things?
No, there's two different things. They're totally two different things. So this child has a medical condition. This child would benefit from specific modifications. Let's give her less work. Let's make sure that she's organized. Maybe she needs frequent breaks. What accommodations does she need? Maybe she needs a bigger notebook. Maybe she needs a bigger computer screen. Maybe she needs to get up around the room and walk around, right? Or maybe she needs a drink of water every hour or half an hour.
What is different from an IEP? What is the difference between the two plans?
The IEP and what else?
And a 401k.
The 504. So the 504, the child is not receiving special education services.
Okay.
So there is no special education teacher. There's no special education teacher. It's just accommodations, modifications, and the child is still protected, getting everything that the child needs.
So it's specifically related to a medical issue. It's not really a special education issue.
It could be a person, you know, who has a wheelchair, American Disabilities Act, right? The person has a wheelchair, the person has ADHD.
ADHD is not considered, it doesn't fall under the umbrella of special education issue?
Can you repeat that?
ADHD does not fall under the umbrella of special education issue?
Only if it's impacting the child's ability to learn.
Okay, so I guess, you know, that's where my ignorance is I kind of assumed that if a child had ADHD that it would. So it doesn't always.
Not always. Only if it's actually impacting their ability to learn. With this child, Jolly, right? The make-believe child that I'm talking to you about, she is capable of learning, but she needed those accommodations and modifications. She needed the less time. She needed maybe, you know, the organizer. She is capable. She is able to be with her peers in the general education classroom, right? And to get those extra services from the IRS committee, which is the people who will work on the 504. Yeah. So that child was not eligible. So I want to give you an example of a child who is eligible. So that's Jolly. She was not eligible. Do you understand? She was not eligible because it really did not impact her ability to learn. She is capable of learning. She did not need that special education teacher.
She was not capable of learning. I mean, I'm trying to understand the difference of someone who is capable of learning, but you said with some accommodations. So that would imply that there are kids that are not capable of learning.
They are capable of learning so if a child is eligible for special education services, right? For example, the child who is struggling academic, they're struggling with the phonemic awareness, with the sounds, with the sight words. They're, you know, we're looking at in-district tests. We're looking at state testing here in New Jersey. We're looking at everything, and the child is not scoring the way they should. They're below level, right? The child can hear, the child can see. Well, that's the first thing we need to make sure, right? That the child can hear and see before we test the child. I forgot to tell you that. So when the child is, when we're in our meeting, right? And we have the parent and we're having this identification meeting, Christina, and I say, you know, I did the social assessment and I noticed that the child has difficulty grasping the pencil and the child is writing too close together. You know, this child is going to need the occupational therapist, right? He's going to need an OT evaluation. This child can't go down the stairs properly. This child is going to need the physical therapy, a physical therapy evaluation. This child is having such difficulty retaining information. Memorization is difficult for the child. Expressive language might be difficult for the child. This is just an example for this child, right?
Yeah, so bring us to the end though. Like what happens? So at some point there's a conclusion that the child needs a 504, maybe the child needs an IEP, maybe the child doesn't need anything. How involved is the parent in that? Do they have an option? I know some of this might bring up legal issues. Can they appeal any of these? I mean, if they feel like you guys got it wrong somehow, can they appeal these? And do you see people ever have lawyers involved in these?
I mean, I've been doing this for over 27, 28 years. I mean, we as a child study team, everything runs very smoothly, I have to say. I mean, with the teams that I've worked with the individuals that I've worked with. I mean, you're talking about 90 days that we, you know, we are observing, we're gathering information. If a parent is not in agreement, then we totally understand. I mean, they of course have to sign consent to begin with, right? They have to sign consent. They have to approve the IEP. They are part of the IEP team. And if they don't approve it, then we don't move forward.
Well, I think more often what I hear in my travels, both in the context of my work and otherwise, is a parent may think that the child needs more than what the study team is recommending.
And that's, and I totally understand. Some parents feel that maybe their child needs, for example, you mean a self-contained classroom?
I don't know specifically what, you know, what, just more help in some
fashion. Okay, so we're on the next student, right? So I told you about Jolly Doe and her behavior issues. Let's go here to John Doe. I want you to understand John Doe and all the difficulties John Doe is having, right? Just as an example, so when we do the eligibility and we say, you know what, this child has a specific learning disability, right? The parent has to be in agreement. Yes, we're in agreement. This child is eligible for special education services. The parent has to be in agreement for us to go to the next step, which is the IEP. And if they're not, we can't move forward. So say that the parent is in agreement so we can move forward. What we do is that we go on to the IEP and we talk about programming. And when we talk about programming, we talk about the different programs that there are in special education. It could be resource. It could be in-class support. It could be pull-out support, pull-out replacement. And I'm throwing a lot at you, self-contained. And we got to take it from there. The IEP is a legal document, and there's a lot of information in there. And then parents might say, I want more. And we have to think about, well, okay, Let's talk about least restrictive environment. Let's talk about what accommodations, what modifications, et cetera. So the parent is very, very important. They matter.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all of your input. I feel like there's an awful lot to cover.
There is.
it's a lot to get through in a short time. But you're clearly very knowledgeable about the topic. And I would encourage anybody who wants to learn more about Eileen to go to her website, acmtherapy.com. And I would love to have you back on again to talk maybe more specifically about some of the things we've talked about. You've mentioned like ADHD, and I'm sure there's a lot of other things that come up routinely in the course of your practice that I think would be helpful for parents. So thank you for giving us your time. Appreciate that.
It's a pleasure.
Yes. And then for those of you watching, you can catch the replay here on Facebook, or you can go to our podcast, Divorce Happy Hour podcast, and you can listen to the replay. So thank you for listening or watching, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. For more information, check out divorcehappyhour.com. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.